Jackie Robinson hit that ball. It went zooming across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hits that ball.
When he swung his bat, the crowd went wild because he knocked that ball a solid mile. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hits that ball. Satchel Paige's Mellon, so is Campanella, Newcomb and Dobie too. But it's a natural fact, when Jackie comes to bat, the other team is through. Boy,
he seen Jackie Robinson hit that ball, and he hit it, boy, and that ain't all he stole.
Yes, yeah, yes, I could play that all night. That's a good one. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, today was a tremendous day in Chicago baseball history. 70 years ago, May 18th, 1947, the Brooklyn Dodgers came to Wrigley Field for a regular season game, and it was the first time that an African-American player was in said game. Jackie Robinson went 0-for-4 that day, but the Dodgers phenom drew 46,572 fans, which still holds as the largest paid regular season attendance in Wrigley Field history. And that doesn't even count the estimated 20,000 people who gathered around Wrigley that day just to get a glimpse at history. One little boy that was lucky enough to be in attendance was none other than Jerry Pritikin, the famed bleacher preacher who spent years out at Wrigley Field in the bleachers trying to convert opposing teams' fans. Jerry's in studio tonight to talk about the game. Jerry, great to see you.
I'm glad to be here.
10 years old.
Right.
You were 10 years old. So let's talk about this. Amazing experience when you saw this was coming up and you realized it was 70 years. What automatically came into your head?
Well, my brother and I both were at that game, and we discussed what has happened since that game. And it was a changing of the guard. Baseball changed for the best. And we were there to witness it. And it's one of those things. My father used to love telling us about his good old days, and now I'm talking about my good old days.
Well, Jerry, talk about that day, because you were 10 years old. Did you know, I mean, to think about as a young Cubs fan, did you know how important it was that Jackie Robinson was coming to town?
Well, I knew the change was coming. I was reading the sporting news in those days and, of course, read about – they used to report on the minor leagues, too. And I read about Jackie the year before when he was at Montreal. And then, of course, in January, they started making announcements. And we didn't realize how great a change was coming, but we knew a change was coming. And what was unique is – happened to go to the opener that year and happened to see Hank Greenberg in his first National League game, a two-out double in the sixth inning. He drove in the first and only run of the game, and he was the first $100,000 player at that time. So I was able to see, you know, unique history in that sense. And then just about a week or so later, my brother and I happened to be at the ballpark. It was Babe Ruth Day. And they were piping in from Yankee Stadium, Babe Ruth giving like a farewell speech. And unfortunately, the PA system was not the greatest. I kept tugging at my brother and saying, what did he say? What did he say? but I knew I was listening to the Babe, and I was in awe. And it was unique to say, hey, that's Babe Ruth I'm listening to. And then just a few weeks later, here we go with Jackie Robinson.
It's amazing to think that that year, I mean, 1947, it's Babe Ruth Day, the changing of the guard to go from Babe Ruth and everything he meant to baseball to a new chapter, Jackie Robinson, as a 10-year-old. And you read the papers, you know what's happening, you're reading sporting news. Take us back, if you can, to that day. Did you know that this was such a coveted ticket that people wanted to come out and see Jackie Robinson?
We were aware of it, but we didn't realize how it was going to change things. And fortunately, I lived in a great area in Chicago called Albany Park, and we wanted to be there, and my brother and I. And, you know, it happened to be a Sunday, And we left the house very early because we knew there was going to be a lot of people. 47,000, no way did we think that. But we took the big red streetcars from Albany Park. We had to take two of them, the Lawrence Avenue to Clark Street. And Clark Street, we had to get off four blocks before Wrigley Field because there were so many people coming to the ballpark that they were lined up that they couldn't go any further. So getting off four blocks before that and then getting into a long line. You got to remember, there was no charge cards in those days. I would say 99% right. of the people paid cash to go into the park. So it's amazing to think that they were able to get 47,000 people in on time for the beginning of the game.
So they would just line up. There wasn't sort of you can go and get the tickets a day in advance. Like you had to line up to get into the park.
Right. Of course, there was many box offices open at that time. And we decided we were going to sit in the grandstands. And fortunately, because we did get there early, we were able to get a seat. And many people would ask us, how is it possible they had 47,000 people there? Well, there were no fire laws in those days. And thus, there was people sitting in the aisles on the steps along under the grandstands, along the fences in the back, and in the upper deck along the fences, and, of course, out in the bleachers along the fences there. So I didn't count them one by one, but I do remember the next day, I didn't really realize that it was that many until I read the Daily News the next day, and they had a picture.
But you were going to Wrigley Field, right?
Right.
So you knew that there were more people at this game than before.
Than ever before, sure, because there were times we used to close off the upper deck because there wasn't enough people in, to come out to the ball game. So it was an amazing event. And here again, Mr. Robinson only he came to the plate four times. He took two called third strikes. It wasn't anything of magnitude of getting a hit and on base. Like we got to see all season long afterwards how he kept the pitchers almost giving him a heart attack when he got on base because he was so eager to get to the next base.
Jerry Pritikin's my guest in studio tonight, the bleacher preacher, talking about his day when he was 10 years old, 70 years ago, May 18th, 1947, when the Brooklyn Dodgers and Jackie Robinson came to Wrigley Field for the first time. Let's take a quick break. We'll continue conversation because we skipped past. I mean, you've done such a good job of explaining how you got to the park, the lines. I want to know more about the at-bats. I want to know more about the climate, the environment. We'll do that right after the break. Jerry Pritikin in studio. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Jerry Pritikin in studio. The Bleacher Preacher. We're talking about 70 years ago, May 18th, 1947. The Brooklyn Dodgers came to Wrigley Field, and Jackie Robinson was the first African-American player to play at Wrigley Field. Jerry was there, 10 years old, talking about the experience. You know, today the Chicago Cubs, they put a flag up for Jackie Robinson. And but there hasn't been a lot of fanfare about this event. It's surprising because it's 70 years. It's a big deal. It seems like this is kind of an event, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot for it.
I'm really surprised. But then again, like my father is not here and a lot of my relatives aren't here. And that is a long time ago. And I might like to think of myself still as a kid. But when I look in the mirror, I look more like my father than I do myself. So I realize 70 years is a long period.
Yeah.
And thus, there's probably not that many people who fortunate like I was to be there at the game. And, of course, they didn't have televisions at their houses at that time. So radio would be the only other way they could have heard of what was happening.
Right. Well, let's get back to that game, what you remember from being a 10-year-old Cubs fan who would come out to the park. All right, so like we said, I mean, you kind of glossed quick about Jackie Robinson 0 for 4, two called strikeouts. But talk about the experience. When Jackie Robinson came to the plate for the first time for the Brooklyn Dodgers in that first inning, I don't know what he was batting, but what was the response like? What was the crowd like?
I'm glad to say there was a good ovation from the crowd. In fact, the only boo that day, and I could remember, was for Dixie Walker. And Dixie Walker was booed every time he came to Chicago.
Why? What was Dixie Walker?
Well,
I don't know my Cubs baseball history enough to know.
Dixie Walker did. I guess he was, and I don't want to put into a Confederate, but when you call yourself Dixie, he just didn't give us any reason to cheer him. But then, of course,
was he on the Dodgers or was he in the Cubs?
He was with the Dodgers a long time. And in fact, he had a brother, Harry the Hat Walker, who once led the National League in batting, but he played for...
So there was an ovation for Jackie Robinson.
Yes, a cheer, a warmth. And one of the things I noticed, and I read a lot about this event because I witnessed it, many of the fans brought binoculars with them for the game. And I've been to many games since, and I have never seen that, where a great many, thousands of people brought binoculars to get a better look at this future Hall of Famer.
Wow, that's amazing to me. Take us back to 1947. You would know, 10 years old, maybe you're not paying attention too much to race relations and tensions in America, but were people bringing binoculars because they really wanted to get a close look at an African American in a baseball uniform? Or were they looking at, did they recognize the idea that this was history and this player was phenomenal?
I think they realized the history behind it. And you got to remember, this was a Sunday. And there was a great amount of black people at the ballpark, more so than I have ever seen up until that point. And there was a great amount of people who had gone to church that day. So people didn't get dressed in T-shirts and baseball caps back then. If you take a look at the old-time pictures, you never see a baseball hat.
Right, you got to have a fedora, right?
So many people remarked that many of the blacks were in their Sunday best. Well, they were in their Sunday best because more than likely they had come from church, as well as many other white people did. So it was an atmosphere, not that you get in today's game, where everybody is more casual.
Right.
So they seem, I do not remember any boos. I do not remember any razzing. It's just that everybody came there. I don't want to say they have a good time, especially when the Cubs lose. But at the same time, we sensed something. As a kid, I sensed something. But there was like a buzz going around that you knew something was happening here that you never saw up until that time. And we didn't realize the impact that it had maybe for a long while to come.
You know, when I think about that, how many times does a fan get the opportunity to be in a stadium, a park, in any sport, really, where history is being made? And you've been, as the bleacher preacher, as someone who is a diehard Cub fan, who's been in the bleachers, you're a big part of the Chicago culture and the lore of Cub fans. Have you ever experienced anything like that again?
No, not that I can remember. A few years back, the Cubs did have a Japanese ball player, and it had a unique experience at the time, the first time that he showed up. And they were more into marketing Fukudome's, becoming a Cub. But there wasn't a marketing, like T-shirts or jackets.
For Jackie Robinson.
Or even tennis or anything.
There's no 42 T-shirts being sold.
You were witnessing it. And I didn't, my father taught me how to keep a great scorecard, but I didn't want to do a scorecard that day. I really just wanted to watch what was happening.
You just wanted to watch the environment, watch what was happening.
I learned disliked the Dodgers when they were in Brooklyn as much as I dislike them now than when they're in Los Angeles. However, I always respected good ball players, no matter who they played for. And the Dodgers did have quite a few interesting young ball players. And this is just only a couple of years post World War II. When I started going to the games in 45, I didn't understand because many of the players had gray hair. And I didn't realize that if you were not 4F, you were in the trenches. You weren't in the ballpark
playing. You're fighting, right.
But to see more youthful-looking ball players for me was interesting because I thought all ball players were older than my father.
That's awesome. Jerry, it's a tremendous part of American history, not just baseball, but American history, to be a 10-year-old, to be in that park, to have had the career you've had being a diehard Cubs fan and being a character at the park, what's it mean to you that you had the amazing experience to be in the ballpark when Jackie Robinson came to Chicago?
No, it's probably up until last year, the most unique feeling I had witnessing a ball game. I did get to see a lot of ball players who turned out later to become Hall of Famers. I got to see some of the old-time players who, before they bowed out, I was able to see them in person. One of my favorite pastimes of reading the sport pages was there was always a column, I believe, Arch Ward Ward, The Wake of the News, and at the bottom of it, they had 10 years ago today, and they would mention ballplayers' names of ballplayers that were no longer there or who had become famous, and I can almost visualize what I was reading. Well, as I got a little bit older, 10 and more, all of a sudden, the 10 years, I could say, hey, I remember that, instead of reading about it. And this was one of my beginning of remembering of who I've been watching. One of the things I got to mention, that I'm happy for majority of the Cub fans. I never heard anybody boo Stan Musial. We respected good ball players. I wasn't taught to hate, personally. And I think that's something that I'm glad I don't remember.
It is interesting because, I mean, you're talking about decades of watching Chicago Cubs baseball, and there have been some we saw just this year, Adam Jones as Baltimore Orioles, and, you know, racial taunts from the Boston bleachers. We've heard in Chicago has had that problem where there have been some times in Chicago Cubs history with the players that were underachieving and race was brought in. There is this kind of connection with the Cubs and some racial tension around some ball players. But I mean, when you think about, like you just said, the idea of being at the game where Jackie Robinson came and the warm reception, I mean, you try to dispel those myths.
Well, I just got to throw out that I think only once did I can recall being stupid. And I picked on Frank Robinson. There were stories in the sport pages and whatnot that he had a gun. I didn't understand why he carried a gun, but unfortunately there was a need to protect himself. But as a kid or going a couple of years older, I didn't know that. And I kept saying, where's your gun? Where's your gun? Well, I was happy to say I met Frank when he was the manager at the Giants. And I apologized to him.
Did he remember? Yeah, he probably general taunts, right?
But I could honestly say I did write him a letter many years later apologizing, but he didn't remember that. But I remember thinking how stupid I was. I mean,
that's fandom.
After reading more about what he had to put up with as a ball player, let alone on the field and off the field. So looking back, I don't blame him. In fact, I probably would have had a Tommy gun.
Jerry Pritikin, the bleacher preacher, giving us his story of being a 10-year-old in the grandstands at Wrigley Field for the May 18th, 1947 game where the Brooklyn Dodgers and Jackie Robinson came to Wrigley Field. Still the highest attendance in regular season history at Wrigley Field. Jerry was there. Jerry, thanks so much for sharing your memories and being a guest tonight.
I got one more memory to go for, and that is back-to-back World Series. And we can look forward to that. And I realized you can't judge a team in April or May. It's what's at the end of the year where you're at that time. Mm-hmm. And I would like to be invited back for the repeat for that.
You'll be there. You'll be here. We'll invite you here. You can talk about your prediction of the back-to-back World Series. Jerry, good to see you.
Appreciate it.